The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, hello, and welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition. As we're approaching the end of June, National Annuity Awareness Month. So we've got another show lined up for you here that we're going to tackle RILAs, Registered Index-Linked Annuities, RILA is what that stands for. One of the latest and greatest, I guess you'll say, of the annuity world. Certainly has been growing in popularity recently. But we'll talk about what they are, what they aren't, and as always, kind of give you the good, the bad, and the ugly on any of these. And we'll probably dive straight in pretty quickly because we've got a limited window to record today. So this is going to be, those of you who work out to the show, this is going to be a shorter workout for you, assuming I can rein in Jim and he doesn't go off into the evening as we're recording this at the very end of the day. But I think he's got stuff to do as well. So I'm pretty sure we'll be able to stick to it. Probably only be about 40 minutes or so on the show today. So a nice taper day for those of you walking, jogging, running, lifting weights, whatever it is you do while you're listening to the show. So, Jim, do you listen to podcasts while you hike and walk and stuff?
Yeah, sometimes I will when I'm gardening. Never when I'm hiking. When I'm hiking, I either want to listen to nature.
Yeah.
Or I'm chatting with friends, or I just want to zone out. And last thing I want to do is listen to a podcast or music.
Yeah.
But sometimes when gardening, I'll play music or a podcast or two. So I can't say I do it when working out, but when working outside, yes.
Interesting. I'll have to admit, I'm a participant in a podcast, have been for many years. I am not a podcast listener. I'm sure I would probably enjoy it, but I've just never taken that up.
I've got a series that I strongly recommend people listen to. This series, it sadly has to do with the police department I used to work for. And many, not all, but many of the police officers being featured were attendees of mine in the police academy and very good friends of mine. And it's created by the Boston Globe. They did a phenomenal job. And it's called Spotlight Snitch City. It's an interesting listen. And what I love about it are the accents of the people that they do interview. Oh, my Lord, you can see where how much better I am if you think my accent is bad. You got to listen to the accents. But it's called Spotlight Snitch City. It's about the New Bedford Police Department. Nearly all of the officers featured in this are people I knew, I went to the academy with. And it's about some good that they did, but unfortunately some bad. And I am just totally intrigued by it. And I'm going to play it again on my drive out to Ohio when I leave in 2 days, when my buddy Jeff, he doesn't know yet, but will be in the truck. The mighty, massive, manly, and macho Maverick will be in that truck pulling a 5x8 trailer to Ohio. And I'm going to play the entire series for him. It's about 6-7 hours total, but it's very, very interesting. So anyways, I had no intention of talking about any of this, but you mentioned podcasts. So Spotlight Snitch City for you podcast listeners. And you'll definitely hear a lot about my city, New Bedford, where I was a police officer. Okay.
I might take a listen. That seems like a reasonable commitment to only 6 or 7 hours, not a lifelong commitment like this show.
Broken
right?
up in five parts, and it's created almost on the vein of like one of those news shows, 48 like hours,
Dateline
and things
or something
like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dateline. They did get a few police officers to go on record. Most did not. They got a couple of the bad guys to go on record, who again are. They freely admit, hey, we don't like these cops that we're talking about, but we're being honest. And I have no idea if they are or not. I have no idea. And of course, the cops in question refuse to come on and say anything. But I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued. Yes. And it's sad because I, like I said, went to the academy with most of those guys.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Okay.
Well, the wonderful world of Rylas is upon us.
Is that like the Wonderful World of Disney?
Yeah, something like that. We're making it a little lighthearted. Although these are
so
very serious.
So what we're going to try to do today, folks, this is going to be a short show because I ran into some massive issues with the mighty, manly, macho, massive Maverick trying to pick up the trailer today. Not with the truck, with the trailer people. Don't get me going. But we're running short on time. But we are going to continue this series because I was trying to do a whole loop and I'm going to end with a summary of the entire series because many of you might not see the method to my madness of where I was going. But we began with Spears and we're going to end with Living Benefits, which are an attempt to take the verb annuity, SPIA, single premium immediate annuity, and appeal to people who don't like seeing their money being written away in one lump sum check. That's what a living benefit is. I'm not sold on living benefits. I evaluate them because I feel as a fiduciary, one must look at both. And 9 times out of 10, the SPIA will, probably 95 times out of 100, the SPIA will always beat the living benefit. But occasionally, even Wade Fowler admits, occasionally, you can find a window where a living benefit will pay more money for an annuity that's acting as a noun, not a verb, than the verb SPIA. And if you're not sure what I mean by nouns and verbs, listen to this series or keep listening. So it's going to take another show or two to go that full circle because today we just have to wrap up with Rylas and that's probably all we're going to get to. I was going to start living benefits today, but I won't have time. So what is a RILA? Well, remember, I've been trying to teach you guys that there's two main types of annuities, immediate and deferred, and that there's a difference between a deferred income annuity, which is what, Chris, a noun or a verb, a deferred income annuity?
That one is what we call a verb, since the action has been taken to annuitize immediately. It's just that the income has will not start for some time, the deferral period, but you have, in fact, annuitized as of day one.
Right, and you lost access to your money because you've annuitized. So every annuity, even a single premium immediate annuity, is technically a deferred annuity because you can defer it for as little as a month to as many as 12 months to be a single premium immediate annuity. And deferral is the length of time between when you buy it and when you turn the income stream on. A deferred annuity is different than the deferred income annuity because the deferred annuity, just the DA, deferred annuity, no income in there. That's a noun. And you can buy it and you can wait a week. You can wait 20 years. Before you quote-unquote annuitize it. and take it from a noun, which is just an annuity that you own, but you have access to one degree or another to the account balance. And you're going to turn it into that verb. You're going to take that action and say to the insurance company, you keep the money in the annuity. Just give me the lifetime stream of guaranteed income. Okay. There's two ways that annuities grow. I try teaching you guys this, fixed and variable. On the fixed side, you have MIGAs, multi-year guaranteed annuities, traditional fixed annuities that will set the interest rate for 1 year, then reset every year, and fixed indexed annuities, where similar to a MIGA, they're going to, though, take the interest that they would have given you and instead put it in stock index options and allow you to participate with some of the return of whatever index it's in. And on the variable side, we try teaching you that your money was in a separate account. It's not part of the insurance company's general account, which fixed annuities are. With a fixed annuity, if the insurance company goes under, you become a debt holder against the insurance company because your account is actually part of their general account. But in a variable annuity, where your money, while it's in the deferral phase, is exposed to stock market risk, that's why they call it variable annuity, those annuities are regulated by the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, FINRA for short, and to a lesser degree, the SEC, but they are a true investment. You can lose your shirt and then some in them, depending on how the investments during the deferral phase pan out. Well, Chris, I think you would agree. There's kind of a gap between those two, a middle ground, almost a Venn diagram if you moved the two together. You follow me so far?
Yeah, I think so. So it's a kind of a blended from both. It's a
correct.
Yeah. You know,
I jokingly say a RILA, a registered indexed linked annuity, is what they're called. It's for some reason the industry termed it. I think it's a mouthful, but it's stuck. Some people call them buffered annuities. I kind of like that because we always talk about buffered ETFs that provide you a degree of principal protection. From 100% principal protected, similar to a fixed indexed annuity, to one carrier that I know, ETF sponsor has a 9% buffer where they would eat the first 9%. They would technically eat the first 9%, and then you would eat everything below 9. There's a 10% buffer, there's a 15% buffer, there's a 20, and there's a 30. And I would assume someday there'll be a 35 and a 40. That's a buffered ETF, and that's very similar to, well, the 100% buffer is what the fixed indexed annuity is. The 100% principal risk is the variable annuity. So many people that I run into who have a variable annuity will tell me when I ask them, why'd you buy it? Oh, I wanted principal protection. Well, you bought the wrong annuity. You have to buy a fixed annuity for the 100% principal protection. The variable annuity has no principal protection unless it has a separate rider called a guaranteed accumulation rider, where the insurance company will sometimes say, hey, if you keep it for 10 years, we guarantee at least what you put into the annuity. So if you bought the worst investments or you have the worst decade, because it's generally a 10-year hold on them, you have the worst decade, we're going to make you whole. That's the guaranteed accumulation rider on a variable annuity. But you can still lose if you sell it within that 10-year period. The guaranteed accumulation benefit will only kick in on the 10th anniversary in most cases. So there's definitely principal protection. I like to say the RILA is the insurance industry's answer to structured notes, which are sponsored by banks, and buffered ETFs, which are sponsored by registered investment advisory firms. The insurance industry had nothing in the middle. It was all fixed, 100% guaranteed, or all variable, total risk. There was nothing in the middle. So I jokingly say that there was a drunken one-night stand between a fixed-indexed annuity and a variable annuity, and the net result was the RILA, a registered indexed-linked annuity. The good news is, folks, since this is going to be a truncated show, RILAs are not that hard to understand if you understand buffered ETFs. And we spend a lot of time talking about buffered ETFs and how the buffered ETFs work. Well, again, RILAs are relatively new. They came out probably 5-6 years ago. You might have found one a little bit earlier than that, but they've only caught on over the past 12 to 18 months, where they're now the top-selling annuity because brokers are pushing them like hell, and registered investment advisors are pushing them because there's several on the advisory distribution platform allowing them to charge their AUM fee. So you have registered reps of broker-dealers, and you have investment advisory reps pushing them because they're appealing. They sound good. Oh, you get some of the gain, some of the losses you get to choose. And it's appealing to people to have that degree of principal protection. And I can't fault them for that. I'm a firm believer in buffered ETFs because I like the degree of principal protection. I've never sold a RILA. It's not to say I never would. Some are intriguing to me, but I don't like the long penalty period, especially on the ones sold by registered reps as a commission brokerage product. They will have a long penalty period. Some RILAs that are sold on the advisory channel, so you need to have a relationship with a registered investment advisory firm. You need to have an advisor who's an investment advisor representative, and they can distribute the RILAs and the fixed indexed annuities and variable annuities as well on what is called a fee-based platform. Now, even though you won't pay a commission to buy them, you will pay a management fee to the investment advisor for putting you in it. And honestly, if you stop and look at it, sometimes a upfront commission product is better than one that's going to ding you 1% of your assets for as long as you own it. So you have to be real careful when you buy these, depending on who you want to buy them from. So what did they do? The RILA itself is just kind of the insurance wrapper, or the annuity wrapper. It's set as a RILA. It is regulated by FINRA. It's not a fixed product. Even though it has a fixed background, if you will, it's predominantly a brokerage product, meaning you can lose money in it. So the money inside a RILA and the money inside a variable annuity, which is maybe appealing to some people, is not part of the general account of the insurance company. Unless in the RILA, if you choose the 100% option inside the RILA, I believe 100% buffered option, you're not going to expose your money to any risk. I believe some of those dollars might be a general account product, but I'll concede I'm not 100% sure on RILAs. If it's a what the industry calls a general account product, it means your money is the insurance company's while it's inside the annuity, and if the insurance company went under, you would become a creditor against the insurance company. If it is a separate account product, it means your money is actually squirreled away separately from the insurance company. And the insurance company makes their money by charging fees on the annuity. Variable annuities are separate account products. So if the insurance company went bust and you had a variable annuity, your money is protected. Now, if you had an income rider, a living benefit, which we're going to talk about next week, that is subject to the claims paying ability of the issuing insurance company. So even though your money is protected, your guaranteed income may not be. It will be subject to the limits of your state's guarantee fund. But when it comes to a RILA, I concede I'm not 100% certain, but I believe it is a separate account product and not a general account product. Okay. How are the annuities different than buffered ETFs then? The biggest difference is going to be with the RILA, you lock your money up. Now, there are some advisory RILAs that are not distributed through registered reps of a broker-dealer and sold as a commission product, but they are offered through an investment advisor representative who is going to charge you an AUM fee on it. Some of the providers of those RILAs, folks, do not impose a penalty period. You can get out at any time. But they will generally put a MVA, market value adjustment, on it. And we talked about those last week. Mm-hmm. You're probably not going to find that flexibility in a brokerage product because the brokerage product did what, Chris?
It paid a commission, which then the insurance company is worried about being out that money if for some reason the annuity was liquidated or closed too early in its life so that they weren't able to recover from you via the inherent embedded fees or spread. So they're going to have to, you're going to be on the hook for a period of time when it's a commission-based product. Not simply a market value adjustment piece.
Correct. So there is a degree of liquidity on the investment advisory side if you're willing to pay an ongoing AUM fee to the advisor who puts you in it. But if interest rates move against you, chances are you will still pay a cost to get out of it before the penalty period expires because of the market value adjustment. Penalty periods on these are generally 7 to 10 years. So it's meant to be a longer-term hold, either an accumulation product, or it can be a distribution phase product or a retirement product if you match the expiration of the penalty phase or the expiration of the market value adjustment if you have a advisory annuity. If you match the expiration of those two costs, if you will, to when you're going to need the money. So that's how I would figure people would want to use them. You're going to either be in the accumulation phase still, and you want some principal protection. Maybe you're not familiar with buffered products on the ETF side, or you like the fact that RILAs will generally have cap rates higher than the cap rates of ETFs. Do you know why that is, Chris? I think you do. Why, again, would the annuity most likely have a higher cap rate on the upside? If the downside protection is the same, whether it's 10 or 15 or 20% downside, why would the RILA generally have a higher cap rate than the buffered ETF?
So the ETF, since they're fully liquid, have to be structured on the back end a little bit differently to accommodate that liquidity piece, whereas the longer term, the stickier, we'll call it, RILAs, or really most of the insurance projects, allow the insurance company, the sponsor of these, to actually build the engine behind it a little bit differently, and that will squeeze out a little more upside potential.
Right. That penalty phase allows the insurance company to feel more comfortable that they're going to have your money for a while, and they can take different sausage making with the management of the options behind the scenes a little more favorably. So you generally, not all the time, but will generally see cap rates higher. So if you're willing to forgo the liquidity if you're adamant, let's say you're doing position, we're distribution planners, even though we have some accumulation clients who hire us mostly because of our fixed fee structure. And they like the fact that our fixed fee structure is in their opinion, much more fairer than a open-ended AUM structure. But the majority of people who work with us on managing assets are in the distribution phase. So if you are fairly certain that you can match up the illiquidity of the RILA, you might find it more favorable than the ETF, assuming some of the other limitations of the RILA are okay with you. Such as you're going to have to pay either a commission up front. Let me rephrase that. The broker selling a commission product will receive a commission up front. You don't pay any dollars outright from the money you're investing at all. These products are what are called spread products. So the insurance company is going to make their money based on how much they think they're going to get in the options trade, how much they're willing to give you, how much they're going to keep as a profit. And when the money is inside the RILA, they can also direct a lot of it to fixed income and use the interest generated from fixed income to fund the options that they're doing on these options trades. And they can make money off of the fixed income spread as well, just like fixed indexed annuities do. So these are called spread products. So when I say that the broker, if you buy a commission-based brokerage one, when I say that the broker is going to earn a commission, it's not coming out of your pocket. It's coming out of the spread. Now, the insurance company doesn't have to disclose how much they think they're going to earn. Here's your cap rate is 10, but we actually think we're going to earn 11. We're keeping the difference. They don't have to disclose any of that. So you don't really know what the cost is. Unlike an ETF, the buffered ETF must show you and tell you, here's the expense ratio. Here's what you're paying. This is your fee. Here's the gross cap rate we're striving for. Here is your fee. Here's what you're getting. With the insurance product, you only see what you're getting. You're not seeing the gross, which is too bad because if you subtracted the two, you would be able to extrapolate what the cost of your annuity is. So again, these are spread products. You would think, Chris, on a brokered product that paid a commission, there would be smaller or shorter cap rates than a fee-based product that no commission was paid by the insurance company. Doesn't that seem reasonable?
It seems reasonable, yeah.
Yeah, ain't going to happen. One of the biggest providers of RILAs I have looked at religiously, their advisory and brokerage product does the same. And in fact, I kid you not, folks, the brokerage product had cap rates higher than the advisory product. And I thought it was a misprint. Mm-hmm. And I actually called the insurance company. And they went on to explain me that the fee structure is different. And in the brokerage product, they can actually pay a higher cap rate. And I said to them, this makes no sense. Because not only is the cap rate lower on the advisory product, and you didn't even have to pay a commission, the advisor is going to take an AUM fee from it. That's the whole reason that investment advisor reps love these things now. They can charge their AUM fee on them, lowering the cap rate even more. So I don't have it handy with me, but next week I'll pull some of the documents I had. And this is going back a year, year and a half ago now when I started following this company because they're the biggest sellers of RILAs. I will see if I can get a new quote sheet. And see, the gentleman on the phone said that as investment advisory products caught on and they were more being sold, those cap rates should start coming more into parity. But this is going to be something you need to pay attention to, folks, if you buy one of these annuities. Mm-hmm. The person putting you in them is going to be paid one way or another. The commission one, it's a spread product, so you just have to look at the cap rate. The advisor is being paid, or the broker is being paid, through that spread product. On the advisory annuity, there is no commission being paid to the advisor. He or she is going to debit their AUM fee from the annuity. It cannot be greater than 1.5%, but it can be anywhere from 1.5% or down. And they're going to take their AUM fee right out of the annuity. If that cap rate is on par with a brokered sold one, I'd be hard-pressed to tell you to buy the one from the investment advisor representative.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a better deal to buy the commission one. And if you're an IAR, you are a fiduciary. And if you're only peddling the advisory ones and then debiting your AUM fee from it, netting your client less than what they could have got on the commission one, I don't think you're doing your due diligence correctly, and I don't think you're doing your fiduciary duty correctly. I think it's up to you to understand both sides of the ledger, even if it meant saying, hey, I can't get you in a better deal than the brokerage one. You should go find a broker and buy it. I still feel this is a good, if it was a good product when you were going to charge your AUM fee on it, it's still a good product. And maybe they need to go to the broker and buy it from the broker. But I kid you, I was shocked, Chris, as I started seeing this.
It's weird.
It doesn't happen all the time. That's why you have to constantly be looking. And if someone is pushing one of these products on you, listeners, they're either going to be a broker earning a commission. So again, there's nothing wrong. That's how insurance is sold, but they're going to be earning a commission. Now, you can ask them what the commission is, and I'll tell you right now, it'll be between 5 and 7% up front or 1% annual trail. Depends which option they take. See what they tell you, but that'll pretty much be industry standard. But you should compare, if you had gung-ho on one of these annuities, and I don't love them, but I don't despise them. I favor buffered ETFs because I like the liquidity of them, but I do concede the cap rates are higher and sometimes can be significantly higher, that if someone is adamant they want one of these degrees of principal protection and they're certain they're fine with the penalty phase if it's a brokerage product or the market value adjustment phase if it's an advisory product and the advisory fee they're going to have to pay to their advisor to put them in this AUM-driven product. If you're comfortable with all that, then I'm fine with you guys buying them because they will have a higher cap rate than the ETF. But make sure you adjust for the lack of liquidity. And if it is an advisory product, make sure you reduce the cap rate by whatever the AUM fee the advisor is going to be charging. Any questions, Chris? I know this is new to you, but if you have questions, our listeners have questions.
No, I think it's been pretty easy to follow so far, and I think you're making a good point that if your potential upside, which is what the cap rate is, right? The cap is the most that your product, your RILA, is going to increase given a large enough increase in the index that's tied to that RILA is tied to. If you have no additional upside and the, you know, participation up to that cap is exactly the same between the two, a commission-based product, the insurance company pays that commission. It's not coming from your RILA account balance, if you will, over
especially
time.
Especially if the cap rates of both are identical.
Right. Whereas if it's a advisor sold, so no commission being paid, thinking, oh my gosh, it's got to be better because there's no commission, that instead, they're going to be draining their fee, if you will, from that RILA over time. So, I mean, there's a distinct difference between those two. And if there's not an offsetting plus for the advisor sold, then I too would be hard pressed for someone to consider that. And if those are, you know, the matches out there and you're a fiduciary, to put them in a product where you're going to drain like that versus sending them to your, you know, local commissioned based agent to sell them that thing, that's going to be a tough sell. I think you're going to have a tough time defending that if it's discovered.
And you have to compare, even if the broker sold has a lower, which is where you think it would have been. Mm-hmm. And I did save the PDF, so we will reference it next week. But again, it was from several years ago, so I'd like to try to see if it's changed. Again, they're being sold so much, and the person on the phone thought when there's a stronger demand, those should come into more parity, and maybe he is right. But it was intriguing a year and a half or so ago when I started following this, how the broker sold one that paid a commission had a higher cap rate than the advisory sold one. It was bizarre. Okay, what I'm saying, listener, errors, plural, not just one. The products are compelling. Again, to me, especially the way we manage money, if the time of the expiration of the penalty phase, 5 to 7 years, whether it's an outright penalty because you paid a commission or a market value adjustment because you have an advisory product, and you don't think you're going to want the money, adjusted for the fees that your advisor are going to charge you, you might come out better than buying a buffered ETF. And at that point, I would say, fine, go for the RILA. But I feel if you're working with an investment advisor representative and they want to put you in a RILA and charge their AUM fee, and there's nothing wrong with that, or if you're working with a broker who wants to put you in a RILA and earn a commission, there's nothing wrong with that. You, listeners, and few of you will probably do this because most of you are Vanguardian do-it-yourselfers, but you're at the vanguard, no pun intended, of your friends and family and colleagues. If you hear that they're thinking of them, they should talk to the opposite end. So if they're talking to an investment advisor representative about company X's RILA that the investment advisor representative wants to charge an AUM fee on, they should go find a broker who sells that company's brokered version. And they all do. They have the brokered version and the investment advisor representative version. Find a broker. Look at the brokered version. You can't ask the investment advisor representative unless they have an insurance license, and few of them do. Remember, on the investment advisor representative side, you're going to be actually dealing with a wholesaler who's actually going to put you in the product. The investment advisor representative, you're just going to sign a letter of authorization, a limited power of attorney is what it is, authorizing the advisor to debit their fee from your annuity. You should go out, though, and find a broker who sells the brokered version of that annuity and match it up side by side. That, I think, is the only way you should buy these. Don't go in blind. I'm just telling you, the RILA market, if you will, is so new. There's a lot of competition. There's still far more broker-sold ones than advisor-sold ones. You might get this cap rate disparity. And remember to reduce the cap rate by the advisory fee. Okay, here's the final thing before we wrap up with RILAs that, again, lead me to prefer ETFs. And it's if you're working with a non-qualified annuity. Chris, what's the difference between non-qualified and qualified annuity?
So essentially a qualified annuity, think of it as inside of the IRA wrapper, if you will. That's so it's treated similarly from a tax perspective to an IRA. Non-qualified means you've got basis, the amount you've contributed, and then gains that might happen, interest crediting or what's whatever, that the basis can come out tax-free, but the gain is going to come out as taxable income instead. So plays by a little bit different tax rules is the difference between the two.
Perfect. So when you take money out of an IRA, Chris, would that fall into the always taxable, maybe taxable, never taxable realm?
That's the always taxable realm.
Always taxable. Mm-hmm. So if you're buying a RILA or a buffered ETF inside an IRA, And someday in the future, maybe inside a 401k, you will start to see RILAs. I don't know about ETFs inside 401ks yet, but RILAs will definitely be inside 401ks very quickly. It doesn't matter in the sense all distributions are going to be taxed as income. Mm-hmm. It's always taxable. That's why I break it down to always taxable, maybe taxable, never taxable. Chris, if you buy an investment inside a brokerage account, whether that's at Schwab, Fidelity, Vanguard, E-Trade, is it, I don't even know if E-Trade's around anymore, but whatever. If you buy an investment through a brokerage platform, would it fall into the always taxable, maybe taxable, and never taxable?
That's going to be maybe taxable because you'll have your contribution, the amount you deposited being basis, which you can get at without taxes. Now, can you get at it directly or not? There's always a question, but that amount when it comes out is not taxable because you've already paid taxes on it, creating tax basis. Gains that you might have on there are going to be possibly subject to taxes because, as we know, if they're a capital gain, there's actually a 0% bracket in certain circumstances. So even if you have a gain, it might not be taxable, or it might be taxable depending on your circumstances. And then if you have a loss, you might actually get the ability to offset other gains with that loss. So there's all kinds of maybes going on inside of a brokerage account situation.
Exactly. And if it is subject to taxes, it's going to be the lower capital gains taxes rather than income taxes.
Right.
But here's the thing we've been teaching you about annuities, folks. Annuities create IRD, income with respect to a decedent. The government considers annuities to be a retirement product, and they are a retirement product. So they get treated like any other retirement product with a lot of differences. But for the most part, they're treated like your IRA. So if you have a brokerage account and you buy a non-qualified annuity, it's not going to receive any type of capital gains treatments,
right,
because it's IRD, income with respect to a decedent. Income with respect to a decedent, Chris, is always taxed as what?
As ordinary income.
Ordinary income. Chris, income with respect to decedent, when you die, true or false, gets a step up in basis?
That would be false. It does not get a step up on ordinary income IRD. For the same reason, you know, distributions from an IRA is IRD, and there's also no step up in a IRA. That all of that money is taxable even once you're dead.
But a buffered ETF, folks, held in a brokerage account is not IRD. It's just an investment that is going to give you a degree of principal protection, just like the RILA. Could be anywhere from 100%, which puts it more into the fixed indexed annuity category. But most RILAs also have a 100% buffer. And then again, you can get a 9, 15, 10, 20, 30. In the RILAs, I've seen one go out as much as 40% buffer. Now, the cap rate on a 40% buffer ain't that high, but I've seen them as far as 40%. But they're generally 10, 20, 30, and like I said, one company at least has a 40. So they'll give you that degree of principal protection and a limited cap on the upside, just like the buffered ETFs. But in a brokerage account, if you buy a non-qualified annuity, when you take that money out, it's going to be taxed as income, not the more favorable long-term capital gain, which is what your ETF would be taxed at, as long as you've held it for 1 year and a day. And remember, with the ETFs, they just continually reset. So it's not like every year when it resets and you get a new 12-month outcome period that you have to hold it for another 12 months to get the long-term cap gain treatment. Absolutely not. Once you've had that ETF ticker for 12 months, it's a long-term cap gain. It will also get a step up in basis at your death. And as a long-term cap gain, it'll be taxed as capital gain, not income. And that could be zero. Or you could gift it to your grandchild and they sell it for college. And they get it gifted. And if they're in a zero cap gain bracket, wonderful. They can get out tax-free. That's why I call them maybe taxable. Non-qualified annuities, especially when you cross the realm from fixed product, which I can argue is a cash-like holding, and we do use non-qualified multi-year guaranteed annuities all the time. But a non-qualified annuity doesn't receive any of the gains of taking risk with your money. You buy a variable annuity as a non-qualified annuity and lose, you get none of the benefits of being able to deduct the losses. And when you take out the gains, assuming you got any, it's taxed as income, not capital gain. Not very good. Same thing with RILAs. RILAs will create IRD. And as we wrap this up, many of you are probably sitting there saying, no problem, Jim. I'll put my money into the RILA, but I'll just take my basis out. I'll leave the income in there. So if I ever need the money, I can just take my basis out. Similar to what I could have done with the ETF, I can pick the shares I sell and I can pick the more favorable shares. I'll just do that with my RILA or my variable annuity or my fixed indexed annuity. What says you, Chris?
Well, it's not me, but the tax code says that as you take money out of an annuity, the first out is the gain because of LIFO, last in, first out. The first dollars into the annuity is the principal, your basis that you put in there when you bought it, when you paid the premium. Those dollars come out last. The last dollars in, which is the gain, which hopefully has happened in the account, that gain comes out first, and as you mentioned, comes out recognized as ordinary income. There is no return of basis until you have distributed all of the gain. Then you finally get to the already taxed, thus tax-free at this point, basis that's part of that account.
Exactly. So adjusted for this tax situation on non-qualified annuities, inside an IRA or in the future 401ks, it's all a wash. It's right. Whether you have the ETF or the RILA, it's all going to be taxed as income. But a non-qualified, I think buffered ETFs or any type of investment that will keep your investment from being treated as IRD and instead be treated as capital takes precedence and favor. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're going to hold it till death, because the RILA will never get, in a non-qualified account, a step up in basis. And if it's inherited by a non-spousal beneficiary, they have to close it within 5 years. They don't even get a 10-year stretch out. They get the 5-year rule. Or they can annuitize it within 1 year and spread the gain out over their lifetime as a lifetime stream of guaranteed income. But I don't know if they would want to do that, if they would want to take a noun and turn it into a verb. But an annuity by a non-spouse beneficiary has to be closed within 5 years. A non-qualified annuity has to be closed within 5 years. Whereas a buffered ETF would get a 100% step up in basis at your death and could be received tax-free. So there's all these little nuances. Again, I'm intrigued by RILAs because I do like the higher cap rates. We've never bit the bullet and used them, because I don't like the illiquidity feature. But if our clients ever wanted them and they felt comfortable with the illiquidity feature, if the cap rate difference was significant enough, especially if it was inside an IRA, not a non-qualified account, I would do it if the client wanted it. So I'm intrigued by them, but not 100% sold on them at all. I would encourage you, if you're considering them, compare them to a buffered ETF if you are buying them outside of an IRA for all these tax benefits I mentioned, or all the tax negatives that I mentioned with the annuity. But if you are also buying one, compare the same product, whether you buy it on the brokerage side or the advisor side, so you can see which is best. Having the annuity through a spread, pay the broker their commission, and your cap rate is your cap rate, or buying it through an advisor where your cap rate needs to be reduced by the advisory fee. And if the cap rate of the broker product and the advisory one are near identical, the fee may lower the cap rate less than what the brokered one would have paid you. And at that point, in my opinion, you should have went with the brokered one. Mm-hmm. So do your homework on them. They're intriguing. They're being pushed heavily. You likely will be offered one if you have an advisor or run into one at a cocktail party. Just do your homework. Think it through and talk to both sides of the distribution channel, the brokerage channel and the advisory channel. And that will give you an idea of which one, if you decide to go that route, is best. And again, in a brokerage account, not sold on them. Too many tax negatives of the annuity. Not to mention the forced annuitization. You can wrap up with Chris because I'll keep going. But that forced annuitization, we're running into this today, Chris, with someone at 80, as you know, in 2 more years. Mm-hmm. That's the last negative with the RILA I didn't think about on non-qual. And then Chris will wrap up.
Yeah, so that's hopefully gives everybody a taste of RILAs, registered index linked annuities. First one was 2010, so it has been 15 years since they came out, but they really picked up steam, like you said, 5-7 years ago. So very, very popular in the insurance circles this year and the past few years.
I think they overtook fixed indexed annuities as the most popular, they're about to. But yeah, they are definitely growing in popularity.
Yeah, perfect. So we've got a Q&A show coming up, which will still be annuity focused, if you will. We're still in National Annuity Awareness Month. Next show, even though it's technically going to air the very beginning of July, we've still got some stuff to talk about on the annuity side. So we've got at least one more EDU show on annuities where we kind of close the circle, if you will, as Jim discussed before. So we really appreciate everybody listening. And yeah, that's about it. Jim, you have a nice evening, and we'll be back with everybody next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.